Welcome back to Alive at 5. I'm your host, David Leonard, and it's my pleasure to welcome the program here this afternoon, Susan Colton. Susan is the author of an upcoming book entitled Principal's Passion, A Quest for Quality Education. I wanted her to come on the program today with me and spend some time talking about her book, her career working in public education, some of the issues facing public education, and some of the solutions she sees out there, some of the things that actually worked for her during her career. Susan, welcome aboard. It's a pleasure to spend some time with you.
Well, thank you, David. I'm happy to be here with you and your listeners today.
Here at the beginning, for someone out there who may not be familiar with you, if you'd be so kind, tell us a little about yourself. Who's Susan Colton?
Well, Susan Colton is a retired principal who has spent 35 years in public education and 22 years as an elementary principal. And right now, I'm wanting to share my experiences and my influence on the thousands of teachers and parents and community members that I've had the opportunity to become partners with in the educational process of their children. I was once, when I was an assistant principal aspiring to become a principal, told by my best of friends that I would never become a principal because I was too nice. And so not long after that, I got the call to come to a school that was in total chaos. And from that moment on, my life changed, and I was totally dedicated to students, to parents and communities, and to making sure that the public education system was the best that it could be.
Now, before we get on to really the subject of your book, I wanted to ask you this. In terms of your career choice as a young person, what was it about the field of public education, becoming an educator, working with students and teachers, what was it about that whole process that made you want to be a part of it?
Well, David, since I was 6 years old, I was an only child at the time. Actually, I have a brother who's 15 years younger than I am, so I was an only child for quite a while there. And at 6 years old, I used to pull all my dolls and teddy bears and everyone together there, and I would play the role of the teachers. And I guess that's why people thought I was a bit bossy when I was a kid. But anyway, as I went into my education and my career, one of the things that I saw was all of the potential out there in our future children and students. And the exciting part for me was watching the light bulbs come on and the aha looks in the eyes of the kids when they discovered something that they now knew and understood. And so that, and then helping students be the best that they could be, helping them believe in themselves and to dream their biggest dreams, and to also work with parents and communities and doing the right things for those children to make that happen.
Now, you touched on this at the beginning, but I'd like to hear more about it. Why did you decide to write this book?
Well, after all of those years in education, I retired, and for 2.5 years, I was a caretaker to my mom, who had Parkinson's, and she passed away about 1.5 years ago. And then suddenly, last December, my husband and my love of my life passed away as well, and so found myself alone at home with my cats. And I do volunteer locally for my school system and also for a education foundation. But there was more to tell, and I had stories inside and things that I thought that I could share with other people. And so I've always loved being a writer. But, you know, in finding, you know, who I am now as a person, I've decided I'm an author. So here I am.
Your book begins with a chapter entitled From Chaos to Calm. And one of the things you talked about in there was what you said earlier about someone telling you you were too nice to become a principal. When I heard that phrase, I had to think, well, maybe they were really, you know, they were trying to steer her in the right direction, maybe. I mean, maybe they had her best interests at heart by telling her that. What do you think about that statement?
Yes, I think that was an omen or a sign, because when I was called that day, I was an assistant principal, and two very distinguished women who were an area superintendent and an area director called me out of a workshop that I was attending as an assistant principal, and I was learning how to make a marketing videotape for our school. And so I had to leave that workshop and drive 20 miles back to a restaurant where I was meeting them for lunch. And heavens knows, I can't remember a thing that I ate that day. But I did remember that they were telling me about this school, which was not too far from my current school, that was in total chaos, that the parents were having clandestine meetings and parking lots and plotting against the teachers and the principal, that the principal had just been removed from the school that morning, and I was to come in the afternoon and take over in an acting principal role. And they also told me that there were rumors the teachers were wearing black armbands because they didn't like what was going on with the parents and the principal. So I had a lot of deep breaths to take during that time. And one of these very distinguished women also sent me home to change my pantsuit into a skirt suit so that I would be appropriately presented to that staff that afternoon. And, of course, my heart was beating a million miles an hour, and I faced my staff. And I took a deep breath, and I thought, I need to be myself. And so I spoke to them from my heart, and I told them that I would be there for them, but we would do what was right for children. And I would listen to their concerns, and we would work together to address them and find solutions. And one of the things that I did was, you know, to make sure that I made eye contact with everyone, that I made everyone feel that I was talking to them personally. And, you know, at the end of that meeting, several teachers came up to me and said welcome, and they were looking forward to working with me. So this, you know, I think was a blessing in disguise. You know, maybe I was too nice for a reason, because those two distinguished ladies told me that my role there at that school would be to heal the staff and to make that chaotic situation disappear.
One of the things you write about in that chapter is that you consistently did the same three things daily to work on improving the overall atmosphere in the school. Tell me about that.
Well, yes, there were three things that I did. I made sure that I did every day. The first one was listen, listen, listen. The second one was do what you say and say what you do. And the third one was to value each person as an individual. Now, listening, you know, going in there and being there the first week and having people lined up and teachers and staff and parents at your door, and getting in your office and sitting back with their arms folded and just blurting out all of the things that they see that need to be changed, I decided that there was a lot to hear. So instead of trying to put my views forward and jump on what they were saying and offer solutions, I decided that it would be better just to sit back and listen. So for 6 months, at least, I did mostly listening, and really listening, not just surface listening, but, you know, listening to understand where they were coming from, listening to see their body language and to feel their feelings, you know, and how they were reacting to the situation. So I believe that being a good listener is the number one thing that I did, you know, that helped me be successful, is just to sit back and not have all the solutions, but to work with the staff and the parents and to come up with solutions together. To do what you say and say what you do, you know, when I met with someone or when a teacher approached me and they had an issue, if I knew, you know, if I could address that issue right away, I would. But if I didn't, I wasn't afraid to say, you know, I'm going to do some research on that and I'll get back to you. But I always gave them a time, you know, if it was a Monday or a Tuesday, I'll get back to you before before the end of the school day on Friday. So I always followed through with what I said, because I think it's very important when you're building trust with people that you follow through and do what you say and say what you do. And sometimes that also means, you know, it can also be in a negative way, especially for the person on the other side. You know, for example, a teacher who might often leave their class unsupervised to use the restroom or go make a phone call or whatever, which is not acceptable and harmful to the safety of students. And in that case, you know, if you say you're going to, if it happens again, you're going to impose some disciplinary action or write a letter of reprimand, then you follow through and do it. And one of my best teacher friends that I still have to this day, who respects me 100%, we went, you know, all the way with that situation to having the union come in and sitting down and going through policies and safety issues. So I really believe that is very important, that you walk your talk. Valuing each person as an individual, you know, a question or a comment that any person has to say to you, you cannot take as a stupid question or, you know, a ridiculous way out of the box way of thinking. You have to value what they're saying and where they're coming from. And you have to be authentic and genuine about that when you're speaking to them, because truly they've been through some situations, or they have a view of the situations that they've been through that you haven't. So you can't possibly put yourself in their shoes if you haven't experienced it. So it's important to accept what they say, to value it. You don't have to agree with it. You can agree to disagree along the way, but you certainly need to value each person and where they're coming from.
I'm visiting this afternoon with Susan Colton. Susan is the author of an upcoming book entitled Principals Passion, A Quest for Quality Education. As you were speaking there and you were talking about the three things you were doing, you know, I was making some notes here, and what I wrote was consistency, follow through, and treating others fairly. And those three things, Susan, really, aren't those the qualities that people look for in a leader?
Absolutely. Absolutely the qualities in a leader. A leader needs to model every day the expectations and the behavior that they expect to see. And they also need to not be afraid, you know, not to ask someone else to do something that you wouldn't do yourself. For example, grabbing a broom in the cafeteria during lunchtime and cleaning up a situation if there's, you know, not a maintenance person handy, but just being there, you know, in the trenches and doing, you know, what a good leader does, and that is modeling for others what they would like to see them model back.
In chapter 4, you wrote about becoming the queen of theme. And I want to know more about this. Fill me in, Susan. When you talk about being the queen of theme, what are you talking about?
Well, I'm talking about. I have this reputation of being the queen of fame because I think that school should be a place to come and have fun. And not only for the students, but also for the parents and the community. It shouldn't be a place where people are afraid to walk through the front door. So what I did over the years was develop themes, motivational themes, that would complement the students' learning, and it would really bring everybody together and in anticipation and excitement for a new school year. And some of examples of those themes, the first year, for my first full year at that, it's a chaotic school. For example, my assistant principal and I valet parked the cars the first day that they came in. We had the PTA provide breakfast for the teachers. And our theme that year was Focus on the Stars, because we wanted each of those individual teachers and staff members to feel like a star. And that they would make their students feel the same way. And so through this theme, as well as many others, charting our course was, of course, a cruise theme where we, decorated with balloons and coming on board the first day. Blazing New Trails was all about finding and researching new innovative ideas in education and way to personalize it for kids. So, some people might think that the theme of queen or the queen of theme would be, frivolous and just something that was a waste of time. But it always coincided with the process of change. The Blazing New Trails was all about changing paradigms and going in a new direction in our education with our children. And it got to be very exciting along the way. One year we did a Racing Toward Your Dreams with a NASCAR theme, and all of the parents showed up at the door the first day in their NASCAR shirts with their favorite drivers. And so we always built this into our curriculum so that it would be something that would tie the school and the community together, and it would be an opportunity to have some fun along the way and to share ideas and bring in new innovative things to our school.
You titled Chapter 6, Who's Running the Schoolhouse? And in looking over that, I had to think that anyone who's worked as a teacher recently or any type of educator, school administrator, would have to relate to the subject of that particular chapter. Fill me in. What was it you wanted to get across to people in Who's Running the Schoolhouse?
Well, I think that that over the past, probably started a decade ago, but especially most recently, that teachers and educators, principals, and parents in the community do not have a lot to say about education and how their children are educated, and about teaching and learning. And teachers are not really thought highly of in many communities, and you read very negative articles out there about teachers and about public education and about how public education is failing. And what I'd like to get across there is that it seems, or it is, that politicians and legislators are making the rules, and most of them do not have any educational background, and it is all done because of big business and corporations and money to campaigns that is driving corporate testing companies, teacher evaluation companies, and private privatization, corporate charter school companies, to want to come in and take over and make all the decisions in public schools. And what's happened in schools is that teaching and learning has gone from being fun and enjoyable and an exploratory process to being one that is dictated from the top down, and, you know, not within the system, but the top down from the federal government and the state governments, and kids are being tested. 99% of the time that they spend in school, and teachers are very frustrated because they don't have the time to teach all of the things that they are required to teach. And testing, of course, has always been something that you want to do. You want to assess where the students are so that you can plan your next steps help them make their progress. But a continuance of testing, you know, just for the sake of grading a school or degrading a school, as I look at it, is not the answer. Teachers are correct about the school, about their students, more than 70% of the time. They're right on. And they can assess their students in many different ways by working with them and building relationships and knowing them, rather than a paper and pencil or a computerized test, which is totally impersonal and really doesn't tell you what the student know and are able to do. So my point here is that all of the people with the qualifications, the degrees in education, the experiences that they've had, the training, the wisdom, they are not running their schoolhouses at this time. And even the parents in the community are not having much luck in making changes or saying, you know, my child is sick every day from being tested all the time. So I really think that we can do something about that in our communities, that we can, you know, stop and build relationships with all of these people who are making these decisions and say, you know, enough already.
You know, Susan, as I'm listening to you, I have to tell you that one of the things that I've heard over the years from people, different teachers and administrators, other people in the school system, and about complaining about the level of testing and having to teach for the tests and all that sort of thing. And if I had to sum up what they were telling me in just a few words, I think the way I would phrase this is that what they were saying was that all this stuff that they're having to do to get students ready for these tests is stifling their creativity as teachers and as educators. What do you say to that?
Absolutely. I agree 100% that teachers, by nature, want to do the right thing for all their children, and they know what is the right thing to do. They know that students learn by working together and to solve problems. They know that students learn by having an opportunity to explore a topic and work together in small groups and create a project. And they also know that it's okay for students to fail at what they're doing, because that in itself is a learning experience, and that they build that into their environment and their classrooms, that it's okay to fail, that we share our successes and we share our failures, and then we move forward and we learn by them. So I agree with that 100%, that what we're doing to children these days is just not appropriate. And I'm sure that the business community would agree with that as well, because how many jobs do you go off to and, you know, you sit with a paper and a pencil or a computer? Of course, the computer these days is popular, but, you know, and work separately or individually on something. You know, businesses want people to share ideas, and they want their work teams to come up with new innovations and, you know, creative projects. So teachers are absolutely right when they say that to you, and you are right on with that, David.
I wanted to ask you about the chapter you wrote regarding the need for community engagement. That's one thing that I know our local school superintendent, Wayne Kindle, I've heard him talk about this. I know that the school district takes this very seriously. I've spoken with other administrators, and they think that's a top priority. That need for community engagement, Susan, it's very important for a school, but it's also important for the parents of children in that school as well, isn't it?
It sure is. Parents, for example, need to feel very welcome when they come to their schools. And you can certainly walk into a school, into the front office, you know, and if the way you're welcomed, the climate that you feel when you walk in that school is certainly going to help relax you and make you feel at ease in coming to your child's school. Engaging parents and the community is a number one priority, and I know that there are so many teachers and schools and superintendents and school systems across the country that are working to do that. We have a lot of diversity in our country, and that's a wonderful thing because that's a diversity of ideas, and that brings in new creativity and an understanding of, you know, who we are as humans and how we relate to each other. And it is so important that we as school people reach out to our communities. The first thing to do is invite everyone in, whether it be an event. Parents love to come to events where their children are performing. And, you know, if you invite your legislators, if you invite your local businesses, if you invite your local government officials and you involve them in your schools and what the students are doing, they are going to help you spread the good news, and that news is going to go far and wide. It's so important that we do that. And I work here locally with my local education foundation, and we have set up a community engagement committee that actually works with individual communities and how they can be more involved and help in their schools. There's a whole wealth, especially in Florida where I live, of retired folks who live in retirement communities that are so wise and knowledgeable and have a wealth of information to share, as well as, you know, a relationship as a grandparent or an older person who has, you know, an historical perspective. So, yes, number one is to engage the community, because that is what's going to make a difference in the future of our public schools.
Susan, it's been a great conversation with you here today. Now, I know that your book isn't going to be published until later on this fall, but what can you tell us about where people would be able to get a copy of it?
Well, right now, my book is in the editing stages. My website is in the design process, as I'd like to say, so I don't have that website to release at this time. But my email address is S is in Susan, C-O-L-T-O-N, at BellSouth, B-E-L-L-S-O-U-T-H, .net. And if you shoot me an email, I will get you on my list and certainly let you know. It will be available on Amazon. My publication release date is tentatively scheduled for the end of November, and there will be an Amazon publication review and everything the first weekend in December. So right now, my email is the best way to reach me. And I also can be reached by phone. I have my cell phone is 954-695-5065. And as we go through this process of publishing and getting my book on the market, I welcome anyone to contact me, and I will let you know as soon as everything is up and running, and we'll have an opportunity for you to purchase my book online or on Amazon or maybe in your local bookstore.
Very good. I want to take a moment now to thank you for spending some time with us here today. We've appreciated hearing from you.
Oh, thanks so much, David. It's meant a lot to me to be able to share my story and to continue to help children and educators across our great country.
That's Susan Colton joining me here this afternoon on Alive at 5. Her upcoming book, Principal's Passion, A Quest for Quality Public Education. Keep it tuned right here to Yankton's home team, AM 1450 KYNT, and we'll be right back after this.